Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
This is going to be a fun one, as I feature various clips from atheist comedians, or most of them are atheist. Nothing else, they are tweaking religion, lampooning religion, exposing religion. And I think, you know, we've often seen that, you know, comedy, mockery, even ridicule can be a very powerful tool for social commentary. Now, I'll be honest and play my cards up front. I'm not a huge stand-up comedy fan. It's not that I don't love to laugh, and it's not that I haven't seen a lot of comedians who are genuinely funny and smart and surprising and clever and really good, because I've enjoyed my share of onstage comedy, you know, behind-the-mic comedy. But if I was to be honest with you, especially when I go to a convention of some kind, and the announcement is made, hey, we've got a local comedian lined up for Saturday night. It's going to be great. I die a little bit inside because it is so rare that the comedian to me is actually funny. It's all subjective, but I don't know how many times I've sat in there and I've just been like, oh, I mean, you can feel them working at it. You can feel them trying to shtick or, you know, when you have to force being funny, it's just not funny. It's uncomfortable for people. And I've come to the point in my life, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but when an unknown comedian is scheduled for the roster on a Saturday night, I almost always find a strategic chair near the back door. And I'll hang in there for about 10 minutes. And you can see the writing on the wall. And if it's just uncomfortable and I am miserable, I'll slide out into the lobby, you know, run down to the hotel restaurant for a piece of cake and a coffee, you know, go out to my room and dial Natalie, you know. But especially on the national stage, I think there's a lot of great commentary and some really good comedy that targets religion. And I'm going to feature some of those big names on the broadcast today. I've got Tim Minchin, Sarah Silverman, Dave Allen, George Carlin, Doug Stanhope, you know. And again, I'm playing the clips. It doesn't mean that, like, Stanhope, I appreciate his work, but you know, he doesn't really strike my particular funny bone. But I know he probably hits a lot of people out there in a very humorous way. So anyway, that kind of thing, you're going to hear a potpourri of comedy on the broadcast today. I guess since I mentioned George Carlin, that's a great way to start us off here with atheist comedians. This clip is most commonly referred to as religion is bullshit.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky, who watches everything you do, every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish, where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
The legendary George Carlin. He died back in 2008. He was 71 at the time. He died of heart failure. He'd had a long series of heart problems, various heart attacks, etc. Finally caught up with him June 22nd, 2008, and he is missed. Next up here, some commentary on religion by the comedian Jimmy Carr. He's a popular British-Irish comedian. Been doing this for about 20 years, several TV appearances, and of course, plenty of time on stage. This time, talking about faith.
I saw a documentary recently on Channel 4. It was all about faith. And in it, someone went, well, of course, Scientology is a made-up religion. I thought, as opposed to... It's one of my favourite things is to get Christians talking about Scientology. Because the Christian will go, Scientologists, they're nutters, they believe in aliens. And then you can say to the Christian, what do you believe in again? It's a benevolent zombie that's coming back to save you, isn't it? Good luck with that, that will probably happen. Well, what I'd like to do now, ladies and gentlemen, is tell you what this show is actually about. I've had an extraordinary 12 months. I've had a life-changing experience. I was a very cynical man, and I didn't really have any religion in my life, and I've let spirituality in the last 12 months, and it's been extraordinary. So this evening, what I'd really like to do is to test... I'm joking, there's no God. Grow up. Unless, of course, you're Muslim, in which case there definitely is a God. I'm not a fucking idiot. Seriously, I don't mind upsetting the Church of England. What are they going to do? Hold a fete? I'm sure there are Christians out there in the audience now thinking, if I get hold of that Jimmy Carr, I'm going to bloody well forgive him.
Okay, this next clip, Ricky Gervais. I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud to this audience. I just don't think Ricky Gervais is funny. I mean, stand-up wise, I hear that his show Afterlife is freaking brilliant and that he's brilliant in it. But I'm just specifically talking about Gervais on stage, okay? And it's all subjective, personal taste, etc. But I sat down, I was watching some of his stand-up. I don't watch a lot of stand-up, but I probably watched 20, 25 minutes and... just didn't do it for me, you know what I'm saying? I just couldn't connect to the material. But there's an interesting exchange between Ricky Gervais and Stephen Colbert on Colbert's television show about religion. And I thought that was fascinating. Here's the clip.
Talking about hell before, about this tweet about you going to hell.
Yeah.
I know that you're an atheist, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. People have been debating... that's the devil waiting for you in hell, by the way. Would you want to debate the existence of God? Okay.
Yeah.
So, Ricky Gervais, why is there something instead of nothing?
That makes no sense
you
at all.
You have to answer my question.
That's not the two choices.
No, it's but the choices I'm giving you, I'm the host.
Well, I don't...
You want to concede the debate? Why is there something instead of nothing?
Hold on. Yes? What do you mean, out of nothing? What do you
why is there something... instead of why is there nothing? Why does the universe exist at all? Why is there something?
But surely the bigger question is not why, but how? Well, why is irrelevant,
isn't
it?
Okay, fine. How is there something? Because you think of God as the prime mover. How is there anything
I don't. This is a ridiculous
Is there a prime mover? Is there a demiurge that started everything?
Well, outside science and nature, I don't believe so. Because the interesting thing is, this is the thing, right? So I'm an agnostic atheist, technically. Agnostics mean it means no one knows whether there's a God. So everyone's technically agnostic. We don't know.
That's true,
so
that's true.
An agnostic atheist is someone who doesn't know there's a God or not, as no one does.
So you're not convicted of your atheism?
Well, I am.
Sure.
No, I am, because atheism is only rejecting the claim that there is a God. Atheism isn't a belief system. Mm-hmm. So this is atheism in a nutshell. You say there's a God. I say, can you prove that? You say no. I say, I don't believe you then. Mm-hmm. So you believe in one God, I assume?
In three persons, but go ahead.
Okay, so you believe... Okay. Mm-hmm. So... But there are about 3,000 to choose from that have been, you know, people who believe in
God. I've done some reading, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So basically, you believe in, you deny one less God than I do. You don't believe in 2,999 gods, uh-huh. And I don't believe in just one more.
Right. do you ever have a feeling of great gratitude for existence?
Of course. Chances are billions to one that I am on this planet as me and never will be again.
And I know I can't convince you that there is a God, nor do I really want to convince you there's a God, but
no.
I can only explain my experience, which is that I have a strong desire to direct that gratitude toward something or someone.
Of course.
And that thing is God.
We're mortal. We want to make sense of nature and science, and it's too unfathomable that everything in the universe was once crunched into something smaller than an atom.
But you don't know that.
Well.
You're just believing Stephen Hawking, and that's a matter of faith in his abilities.
Yes.
You don't know it yourself. You're accepting that because someone told you.
Yeah, well, but science is constantly proved all the time. You see, if we take something like any fiction, in any holy book, in any other fiction, and destroyed it, okay, in 1,000 years' time, that wouldn't come back just as it was.
Yes.
Whereas if we took every science book,
right,
and every fact, and destroyed them all, in 1,000 years, they'd all be back, because all the same tests would be the same result.
That's good. That's really good. That's really good.
I don't need faith in science. I don't need faith to know that probably if I jump out of a window, every other time someone jumped out, they smash to the ground because of this thing called gravity.
And then Satan would be raping you.
This is why I'm a good boy.
Now, I don't think she's an atheist. Well, actually, I kind of do. I suspect that she thinks the religion thing is total bullshit. She's a professing Catholic, the comedian Kathleen Madigan. And, you know, she likes to lampoon the Catholic Church. When she talks about religion, it's almost always from a critical eye, from the skeptical eye. She's got an album called Bothering Jesus. And the clip just made me laugh. Here it is.
If I had kids, I would make them go to a Catholic school. Because I'll tell you what, the one thing I guarantee you, if you send your kids to a Catholic school, they will never join ISIS. Somebody would have said to me at age 18, after all that Catholicism, hey, can we talk to you about our religion for a minute? No, you may not. You are 18 years late to this party, Muhammad. I think being Catholic is Christian, but it is pointed out to me many times in the South that they're not the same. Because in the South, they'll go, oh, are you Christian? I'll go, yeah, I'm Catholic. Oh, well, we're Christian. Oh, okay. I thought we said the same thing, but I guess not. There are differences. The Christians have a direct relationship with Jesus, and they speak of it like that. You know what? Me and my relationship with Jesus, well, I love Jesus, Jesus loves me. It's just a direct, very solid relationship with Jesus. And I thought, wow, really? You guys go straight to Jesus. In a Catholic school, I was given a laundry list of people to contact before the nuns said, because otherwise I'm bothering Jesus. You are going to call these people, Kathleen, before you bother Jesus. You could start with your guardian angel. He's got nothing to do 24 hours a day except tend to your needs. If he's not available, you can speak to the saint in charge of the activity you're upset about. Every single saint has been assigned an assignment. You can speak to Jesus's mother if you'd like to. You can give Mary a shout, but you are not bother. Okie dokie. Even if I did something bad, I couldn't tell Jesus. I had to go to confession. I had to get in a creepy closet with a guy in the dark, and then I had to tell him that he's going to tell a guy. And I wasn't good at confession because my dad for many years was a defense attorney, and starting in second grade, he would tell us all at the dinner table, I want all of you kids to remember, if the police capture you or anyone in a position of authority ask you questions, your response, no matter what, are I do not recall, I need an attorney. I do not recall, I need an attorney. 90% of people are in prison because they can't keep their mouths shut. Never, ever snitch on yourself. And then I would go to confession in the closet, and the priest would go, Kathleen, have you done anything bad? Is there anything you'd like to tell me about? I'm not falling for this. My dad's probably planted him here. I know what I'm supposed to say. I'm sorry, Father, but I do not recall, and I need an attorney.
My next clips are classic clips from a comedian. He passed away back in 2005, but you can still find a ton of his material on YouTube. His name is Dave Allen. He hosted The Dave Allen Show on the BBC from 1971 to 1986. His stuff was broadcast all around the world, including in the U.S., and he loved going after religion. Here's one of three clips from Dave Allen. He's talking about the Garden of Eden.
I am what you might call a practicing atheist. I'm quite happy to be an atheist because I think actually God likes atheists better. We never ask him for anything. We're not bothering him all the time, saying, oh, God, please help me, I'm a this thing. And as a practicing atheist, there's certain things that I travel around the world, and no matter where I go, somebody called Gideon leaves me this book to read. It's an Irish book because it says it all began at the beginning. there are certain things that, when I read the Bible, and I do read the Bible, that I find difficult to understand. I mean, if God has been there forever, what was he doing before he got to us? I mean, what was he out there doing? Was he sitting there going, bored today, what'll I do? I mean, suddenly from nowhere, he suddenly decided to create a world. I'll make a world, that's what. Make a world, yes, that's what I'll do. Rivers, seas, boom, mountains, boom, everything's there. I want a garden. I'd like a nice garden. Quack! Garden me. Hate gardening. Need a garden. Ah, gardener, spit and dust. Adam. And he, Adam, never once says, where in the name of God did I come from? I mean, he's 40 years of age. He has no child and he has no recall. He doesn't say, how did I get here? But he's quite happy. He just kind of trundles around the garden, working away. And God is looking at him. And he sees that Adam is happy. I didn't put him there to be happy. I'll put a stop to that. And God, during the night, sneaks down like a thief and steals, doesn't ask, doesn't request, doesn't... steals it! His rib. And from his rib, he makes woman. And Adam wakes up in the morning, he's a real thickie. He's lying there, he's like, and there's somebody else, he doesn't say, where did you come from? How the hell did you get here? Where did you get those lumps? Goes out and goes gardening. And God comes down and has a conversation with Eve and tells her that she can eat of any fruit in the tree in the whole garden with the exception of one fruit tree.
He's talking to a woman. He actually tells her not to eat of the fruit. And then she says, which tree can I eat? He said, that one over there. He points it out to her. And when he goes and hides, and she sneaks up to the tree, and a snake comes down and has a conversation. A snake. Now, if I see a snake, I'll back off. One starts talking, I'll crap myself. And the snake actually convinces her to eat the apple. And she eats the apple. And when she eats the apple, she learns shame. That's what happens when you eat apples. Now, she's not ashamed that she's disobeyed God or that she's eaten the apple. She's ashamed of one here, one part of her body. That's all. She becomes ashamed of that area of the body. Now, why that area? Why not her elbow? Her nose. Do you actually realize that if Eve had been ashamed of her nose, every woman in the world now would be ashamed of your noses? You'd all be sitting here tonight with little nose knickers on. Men would be in nightclubs watching totally naked ladies with G-strings on the nose. Take them off. Oh, I saw a nose. And this is the book. This is the book that you'll go into court and place your hand upon. And swear to tell the truth, the whole truth.
The late Dave Allen, comedian from Dublin, Ireland. Here's clip number two, talking about the Pope.
The Pope, discussing the existence of God with an out-and-out atheist, starts off very correctly, discussion, and as the hours go by, it gets more and more heated, and eventually the Pope turns to the man and he says, "The mom! Just the mom! And you, come here. You are like a man who is totally blindfolded in a dark room looking for a black cat that is not there." The father said, "With all respect, Your Holiness, I think there's great similarity between us both." He said, "What do you mean, similarity?" He said, "Well, as far as I'm concerned, you are like a man who is blindfolded in a totally dark room looking for a black cat that isn't there. The only difference is that you found it."
I think maybe my favorite clip from Dave Allen is his introduction to God, courtesy of a Catholic nun.
"I was educated by the Carmelite nuns, the Gestapo in drag. I went to a school in a little village called Rathfarnham in County Dublin. My first day at school, this convent, long, winding driveway up to it. One of those Gothic doors, great studs in it. Rang the bell and opened. And there's one of these nuns, flapping." "Terrifying, terrifying. 3 and a half, 4 years of age, terrifying. What do you want, little boy?" My mummy and daddy said, I've got to come here." "Yes? Well, if you come here, you've got to be a good little boy. Will you be a good little boy?" And I could see past her. And there's a fella nailed to a cross. I thought, "You're bloody right, I'll be a good little boy." First question they ask, "What do you know about God?" "I don't know anything about God." "Who?" "God! Who's God?" "God? You do not know who God is? Sister, we have an atheist here. Let me tell you, little boy, God is, God was, and God always will be." "What?" "What he is."
"What is that?"
"He is the Father, he is the Son, he is the Holy Ghost. He is three in one. Do you understand?" "I'm 4 years of age, why wouldn't I?"
greatest theological question in the world, three people in one, and I'm naturally, yeah. Where is he? He's here. Well, I can't see him. That doesn't mean because you can't see him that he's not here. It doesn't? He's in the cupboard. He's not in the cupboard. God doesn't go into cupboards. He's under the stairs. He's not under the stairs. He's here with us now. He's upstairs, he's downstairs, he's outside, he's inside, he's everywhere. I think he's a big one. I see him. And ask, do you love him? Do you love him? I don't know. I've never seen him. God loves you. Thank you. And he wants your love. Thank you. But if you do not give him your love, he will cast you into everlasting flame. What? He will cast you into everlasting flame. Have you ever burnt yourself?
Yeah, I burnt myself on the candle.
What was it like?
Oh, very sad. Sore.
Can you imagine that pain all over your body? That's what will happen to you if you do not love God. What do you think of that?
I love him.
I love him! Then I asked, who was the fellow on the cross? Jesus.
Who's Jesus?
He's the Son of God. I've told you. Father, the Son, and Holy Ghost. He's the Son of God. He was born on Christmas Day and died on Easter. I didn't think he didn't hang around, did he?
What happened to him?
He died because of you. Christ died on the cross because of your sins.
When was this?
It was 2,000 years ago. They can't blame me. I'm only four, for Christ's sake. I didn't do nothing. Did he have a daddy? Of course he had a daddy. I've told you he had a daddy. God was his daddy.
Did he have a mummy?
Yes, he had a mummy. Mary was his mummy.
So God was married to Mary?
No, God was not married to Mary. Mary was married to Joseph.
Oh my gosh, Dave Allen just cracks me up. Next up on my list of atheist comedians, this is from the HBO comedy special called We Are Miracles. It's Sarah Silverman.
You know, nothing seems crazy when you're used to it. There's so much crazy shit everywhere. We're used to it. And everything seems crazy when you're not used to it. That's why so many comics make fun of Scientology, right? Because because it's a batshit crazy religion, but it's no more batshit crazy than like every single religion. It's just new, you know? Christianity is super old, but it's fucking crazy. I mean, you're born a sinner. By being born, you are a sinner and you're going to hell. But you can just apologize and then you can go to heaven. No big deal. If you're a murderer, same thing, it's just apologize and go to heaven. You can be Hitler and go to confession and say, forgive me, Father, I killed 6 million Jews, and the priest would just be like, no problem, say 10 Heil Marys. And Hitler goes to heaven. Hitler goes to heaven is the name of my band. Scientology is weird because it's new. It feels weird in our ear holes to hear people worshiping a guy named Ron. We know Rons in our life. He had to change his name to L. Ron because there was another Ron Hubbard in the Writers Guild. That's how recent a religion it is. And people who follow their religion to the letter of the law are just silly. I mean, I want to tell Hasidic Jews, I promise you, God will not mind if you wear a nice cotton blend in the summer. You're being fucking ridiculous. But we live in the greatest country in the world. A country where we have freedom of religion and separation of church and state, only we don't at all and nobody says anything because we're used to it. It says in God we trust on our money. It says in God we trust above the judge's bench in a courtroom, in a court of law where you have to put your hand on a Bible, the Christian Bible, it's not my Bible. I mean, if I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth, not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish. It's fucking crazy.
You may recognize that last little bit. I've incorporated it into the introduction of the Thinking Atheist podcast. Still to come, I've got some Tim Minchin, David Cross, little Bill Maher, more George Carlin. It's Atheist Comedians. We continue after this. My patrons get the broadcast early and totally commercial-free. I appreciate your support so much. Patreon.com/SethAndrews. A fun broadcast this week. Various clips from atheist comedians. Tim Minchin, Australian comedian, actor, writer, musician, songwriter, Renaissance man, genius, Tim Minchin. He has written and sung and spoken a lot about religion. Here's some Tim Minchin on the broadcast.
This survey of American beliefs showed that Americans, at a rate of between 48 and 51%, don't believe in evolution, which is like half. And on top of that 50-odd percent, a further 38 to 40% of Americans believe that biological evolution has occurred, but believe that it was initiated by and has since been kind of administered by God. Leaving a very small percentage of Americans who are right. It's not my theory. But I've done material about evolution before, and in Australia and in Britain, it barely raises an eyebrow. It's just worth a chuckle. But in America, it's quite contentious to do comedy about evolution, you know. It gets a gasp. It's the equivalent of doing material about fisting anywhere else, you know. It's quite confronting for them. I've been heckled by a man in the front row in New York loudly defending his disbelief in evolution. I've been pulled aside in foyers by people defending their disbelief in evolution in the same terms, interestingly enough. It's the same defense that the intelligent design movement uses in the high courts of American states to try and sneak its pseudoscience into American high schools. And that defense is always, but evolution is only a theory. Which is true. I mean, it is a theory, and it's good that they say that. I think it gives you hope, doesn't it? That maybe they feel the same way about the theory of gravity. And they might just float the fuck away.
Okay, Doug Stanhope, the hard-drinking, hard-smoking, hard-swearing, caustic, controversial comedian. Anyway, he's been around for a while. He hails out of Massachusetts, and he loves going after religion. Here's a clip.
How many Christians here tonight? All right, really? Hardcore? No, not hardcore. You made your own Christianity. Yeah. I mean, I'm not busting on you. That's what people do. If you just... never heard of the Bible. How old are you? 32. No one you know ever heard of the Bible. You never heard of the Bible. Never talked to you. You were just walking through a used bookstore today and stumbled across the Bible like a pioneer. Little Lewis and Clark, and you're thumbing through it while you're taking a shit. Yeah, you can read anything while you're taking a shit, right? Let's say they put it on the back of fucking Captain Crunch. How about that? Right? Read anything on the back of Captain Crunch. How quick would you recognize that as true? would you go, hey, this is exactly what I was looking for. Yeah, the fucking flood and the ark, and yeah, this sounds incredibly true. You'd throw it in the trash, would you not? If you've never, because that's why they have to pump it into your head when you're still little and you get a soft spot and you're Santa Claus eligible, and they fucking pump it all in there then, you don't know any better, and then they cork it in there with a whole bunch of fear, and what you do, where you go, I'm not hardcore. You made your own Christianity. What your brain does is it fucking, you believe all the parts that don't affect your life at all. I believe in heaven, I believe Jesus and the resurrection, yeah, sure, sure. But the parts that affect your instincts directly, which is your real God, if you think about it. Your fucking brain grows around that like a club foot. You go, oh, we have to adapt here. No, I believe in Garden of Eden and all that. Yeah, oh, premarital sex? No, I think that was a typo. That's open to interpretation. But I believe in Noah, sure, and... Yeah, I love thy neighbor to an extent, except for that fuckhead up in 3B who plays Beastie Boys till 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm gonna poison his fucking dog if it doesn't stop barking, but the Bible was written before Beastie Boys were around, so it's open to interpretation. You don't believe it. You don't. And this is how I know that those people, because every time you see a tragedy, whether it's 9/11 or a bus goes into a lake or a fucking grandma spontaneously combusts, whatever it is, you see people on the news and they're whining like cunts and they go, ah, it's horrible, it's terrible, and it's tragic. But at least he's in a better place now. He's with Jesus. Then why are you crying? Why are you crying? If you, with all of your faith, your depth of your soul, believes that your loved one is dancing around on a fluffy cloud in an everlasting paradise for all of eternity without a care in the world, happier than pinworms in a baby's stool, why are you crying? You should be ecstatic if you really believe it. You should be calling all your friends on the phone. Did you hear the great news? Lightning struck my baby. Yeah, he's in a better place. God picked him. I told you he was adorable. Yeah. God spared him that average 72-year sentence on this shithole planet. Do you really believe that death leads to eternal bliss, then why are you wearing a seatbelt?
Okay, next up here, this is actually, this speaks to my past. You know, I'm a former Christian radio host, and we used to play a lot of Christian Christmas music. Well, comedian Patton Oswalt did a whole section on the new song, and that's the name of the band, new song called The Christmas Shoes. And there's an animation on YouTube that goes along with this comedy clip that Patton Oswalt just dissects this Jesus-oriented and wildly beloved Christmas song. It's brilliant.
Christmas has come and gone, but boy, one thing about Christmas will not leave me alone. And that is a song that they play at Christmas time. It is the eeriest, most horrific Christmas song I've ever heard. And I like Christmas music. So I'm not against Christmas music. I'm against this dark, disturbing song. And it's called Christmas Shoes. And it's a... Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Jesus, God. The song is called Christmas Shoes. And it's by a Christian group called New Song. Which I don't know why. Why would you name your group New Song? You're just going to be living in an Abbott Costello routine for the rest of your life. Yeah, we got a new song. By who? Exactly. What? Oh, fuck this. So, song is called Christmas Shoes, and I'm going to take you through it very briefly. So the first verse of the song is, it was almost Christmas time. There I stood in another line. Just trying to buy that last gift or two. Not really in the Christmas mood. Oh, there's a guy in line at the store. He's a little cranky. He's a little cranky at Christmas time. Meh. And by the way, I'm going to recite these lyrics because the dude that sings it like this. It was almost Christmas time. Because that's his way of saying, look, I'm singing in a Christian rock band. Ladies, make no mistake, I will lay the fucking pipe into you. You're not... If I get you back in my room at the La Quinta Inn next to this state fair where we're playing, God's telephone pole will have you chanting the sick evening prayer. So... Right, so that's first verse. The guy in line is a little cranky. Now, standing right in front of me was a little boy waiting anxiously, pacing around the way little boys do, and in his hand he held a pair of shoes. Okay, little kid in front of him holding a pair of shoes. Here comes the next verse. His clothes were worn and old. He was dirty from head to toe. So he's like a Dickensian street urchin. In a world full of hand sanitizers, he's, have you got a halfpenny, sir? Then how about a smile? And when it came his time to pay, I couldn't believe what I heard him say. Here comes the chorus of the song. Chorus starts off pretty good, then it takes a hard left turn into Assholeville. So hang on. Get your seatbelts on. Sir, I want to buy these shoes for my mama, please. It's Christmas Eve, and these shoes are just her size. That's sweet. He's buying shoes for his mom. That's really nice. Hang on. Could you hurry, sir? Daddy says there's not much time. She's been sick for quite a while, and I know these shoes will make her smile, and I want her to look beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight. The kid's mom is dying. He is buying her shoes. So when she gets to heaven, by the way, I missed the part of the Bible where Jesus is really bitchy and catty about people's footwear when they get to the pearly gate. You're not getting into heaven in those, honey. No, I'm sorry. I died for your sins, but those pumps are unforgivable. Paul Lind all of a sudden. All right, so he's buying shoes for his mom on Christmas Eve. Here comes the next verse. He counted pennies for what seemed like years. He's paying for the shoes with fucking pennies. Pennies. Then the clerk said, son, there's not enough here. What kind of psychotic asshole hears that this kid's mom is dying? He's paying in pennies. Yeah, you're 6 cents short. How about that? Yeah, life's a bitch, isn't it? That's not our policy here at Fashion Bug. I don't know what to tell you. That 6 cents comes right out of my paycheck. I can't help you. And then, I'm not going to recite the rest of these goddamn lyrics. The little kid turns around to the guy in line and goes, I don't know how I'm going to buy these shoes. Which now it starts to sound like a scam. Like maybe... The kid, they're just going to, the kid and his dad are going to different stores. The dad's out in the parking lot in a beat up Chevy Nova with a trunk just filled with women's shoes. They're just covered in jizz. He's like, listen, go in there. You've got to trick a guy into buying them. I can only jerk off to these if you trick a guy into buying them. That's what Vietnam did to me. The guy, the grouchy guy in line, pays for the shoes, and the kid is happy, and he runs out of the store. Now we get to the bridge of the song. The bridge will make you lose all hope that we live in a just or sane universe. Here it comes. I knew I caught a glimpse of heaven's love as he thanked me and ran out. I knew that God had sent that little boy to remind me of what Christmas is all about. Let's review. There's a guy in line. He's a little cranky on Christmas. God looks down and sees this. Somebody in a bad mood on my son's birthday? Bullshit! Give that kid's mom cancer. Make sure he's in front of him in line. Make him 7 cents short for the shoes. This guy will buy them, and he'll be in a good mood. I almost feel like Jesus is behind God going, I don't think we need to give a kid's mom. Can you shut the fuck up? It was going to be the best birthday you ever had. Going to be the best birthday you ever had.
Okay, my next clip must be an older clip. It's from a British comedy panel show called You Have Been Watching. It's hosted by Charlie Brooker. The clip I saw did not name the other comedians who were commenting, but they were commenting on that classic video with Ray Comfort and Kirk Cameron about how the banana proves God. Now, I know this is old hat to a lot of us because, you know, the banana jokes have been flying around for years and years and years, but it's still a great clip. You Have Been Watching.
I've got a quick question here about another religious show. Take a look at these friendly-looking men. They are Ray and Kirk, who appear on the American evangelical show The Way of the Master. They look normal enough, but what evidence do they use to prove God's existence?
Is it the invention of the green screen?
No, it's edible.
Chicken.
No,
it's too good.
It's too good.
By accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only can you eat it, it shits another sort of food.
Yeah, come on.
It crosses the road.
Not strictly shit.
No, it's a piece of fruit.
The apple.
Nope.
The orange.
Nope.
Banana.
Yes, that's right. They claim the humble banana proves that God exists. Well done, David. Point to you. Now let's enjoy their rigorously scientific argument for the existence of God.
Behold the atheist's nightmare. Now if you study a well-made banana, you'll find on the far side there are three ridges. On the close side, two ridges. If you get your hand ready to grip a banana, you'll find on the far side there are three grooves, on the close side, two grooves. The banana and the hand are perfectly made one for the other. Now, if you go to the top of the banana, you'll find, as with the soda can makers, they placed a tab at the top, so God has placed a tab at the top. When you pull the tab, the contents don't squirt in your face. You'll find the wrapper, which is biodegradable, has perforations. Notice how gracefully it sits over the human hand. Notice it has a point at the top for ease of entry. It's just the right shape for the human mouth. It's chewy, easy to digest, and it's even curved toward the face to make the whole process so much easier. Seriously, Kirk, the whole of creation testifies to the genius of God's creative heart.
Watertight. Absolutely watertight. Incredible. It's almost as if the banana was intelligently designed to be eaten by the monkey he thinks we didn't evolve from.
I'd like to see him do exactly the same thing with a mini baby bell.
This is irrefutable evidence for the existence of cheese.
Yeah.
It's not the most convincing argument they're setting forward.
Well, it's fine in isolation, but then you just think about all the organisms that are just disgusting and horrible and only survive by burrowing into people's eyes or only survive by making us die of swine flu or all these things. You go, well thanks very much, God. So, you know, we've got the banana on one hand and then horrible buboes and sort of rictuses of pain before death on the other.
It kind of proves
it shows he's got a dark side, don't you?
It proves basically what they're trying to prove there is that God is a psychotic bastard.
Yeah.
And when I say God is a psychotic bastard, I want to make it clear, I mean all gods except Allah.
I mean, intelligent design is fine, isn't it? It's just, it shouldn't be described as being a scientific theory. The thing about saying I can suck a banana and I really like it and... I wouldn't count that as strictly, it fits really nicely in my hands. Yeah. And if I do this with my mouth.
That's what it should
I be wouldn't fun. Call that an experiment, strictly.
How the man's cock tickles the back of my throat. It's like God wants me to do it. I don't want to. I mean, you could go, look how this school bus fits perfectly down the ravine. God hates children. Anyway.
Now, Ray Comfort, I think, had to come back and change his tune on the banana thing, because as you and I already know, the banana in the supermarket is not the banana that we see in the wild. It has been genetically modified. And so, you know, this idea that God created the banana that we see in the store, you know, that specifically shaped and colored banana, that's not true. Human beings have been manipulating the banana, which is what makes the joke still funny after all these years. Bill Maher, he's a bit problematic because I think he's an anti-vaxxer or has expressed some skepticism about vaccines. And I think he's pushed woo from time to time. And the movie Religious, which I really enjoyed, has some incorrect information about Jesus comparison. So he's not flawless, okay? But he interviewed another famous atheist, Seth MacFarlane. And of course, Seth MacFarlane is an actor, screenwriter, producer, director, animator. He created the series Family Guy and The Orville. He co-created American Dad. He directed the films Ted and Ted 2 and A Million Ways to Die in the West. Anyway, Bill Maher and Seth MacFarlane had a conversation about religion on Bill's show.
And you are an atheist?
I am, yeah.
And what do you think of the fact that it seems to be a movement that's gaining credibility as of late?
I think it's about fucking time.
People do seem to be coming out of the closet about that in a way they didn't before my movie came out.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully that had something to do with it. But, you know, I think you
I just think it is in general a movie. I mean, it's books, it's movies, it's just about time.
Well, you saw people who have had 8 years of basically being told nothing other than love Jesus and you'll be fine, you know, 9/11 and Jesus. And I think they're finally starting to come out of that and realizing, wait a minute, maybe if he's wrong about this, maybe this is in fact fundamentally wrong. I think there's still a long way to go. I think it's overly optimistic to think that it's gaining popularity with any kind of speed. But
well, it was on the front page of the New York Times this week in a number of places around the country that you might not think it would be happening. When they put up a billboard that says, atheists, please call. You know, there was no complaints. There was just people saying, hey, I want to join.
Yeah, in 200 years, I think maybe we'll be there.
Yeah, I agree. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
Bill Maher's another one of those guys where when I see his stand-up, I want to laugh. You know, I think I want it to be funny. I just, you know, he's interesting. And his interviews are often interesting and even compelling at times. But, you know, when I see him on stage doing his stand-up, not so much. And that's just me. It's all subjective. It's all personal taste. So take a pill, everybody. David Cross, he's an American stand-up comedian and actor, probably best known for Mr. Show and Arrested Development, did some stand-up on the rewritten Bible. Here's a clip.
One of my favorite things about the Bible is how antiquated all the things that are supposed to take place in the future are already. How all the prophecies, how completely antiquated they are. Because, you know, when the Bible was written and then rewritten and then edited and then re-edited and then translated from dead languages and then re-retranslated and then re-edited and then re-re-re-edited and then retranslated and then given to kings for them to take their favorite parts out and then re-edited and then retranslated and then re-edited and then given to the Pope for him to approve and then re-retranslated and then re-rewritten and then rewritten, re-edited, retranslated, re-edited again, all based on stories that were told orally 30 to 90 years after they happened to people who didn't know how to write. So, I guess what I'm saying is the Bible is literally the world's oldest game of telephone.
It's funny, I actually had this conversation about that example of the game of telephone. I was talking to David Fitzgerald, who was author of several books. And he said, you know, the Jesus story isn't even as good as the game of telephone. Because if you play telephone, how that works is you tell somebody something and then they tell someone else and they tell someone else and you go through 15, 20, even 30 people. And at the end, somebody has changed the message and the last person gets something totally different than the first person said. That's the game of telephone. But it assumes there is some verifiable person who is saying some specific thing at the beginning of the game. We can't even nail that down when it comes to the Jesus story. So in that light, the game of telephone analogy might not even work. I don't know. You tell me. The last clip of the show, I had to end with Carlin because he's just the master. George Carlin was the master. And here's the great man talking about God's will.
Pray for anything you want. Pray for anything. But what about the divine plan? Remember that? The divine plan. Long time ago, God made a divine plan. Gave it a lot of thought, decided it was a good plan, put it into practice. And for billions and billions of years, the divine plan has been doing just fine. Now you come along and pray for something. Well, suppose the thing you want isn't in God's divine plan. What do you want him to do? Change his plan? Just for you? Doesn't it seem a little arrogant? It's a divine plan. What's the use of being God if every rundown schmuck with a $2 prayer book can come along and fuck up your plan? And here's something else, another problem you might have. Suppose your prayers aren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine. But if it's God's will and he's going to do what he wants to anyway, why the fuck bother praying in the first place? Seems like a big waste of time to me. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to his will? It's all very confusing. So to get around a lot of this, I decided to worship the sun. But as I said, I don't pray to the sun. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Two reasons. First of all, I think he's a good actor, okay? To me, that counts. Second, he looks like a guy who can get things done. Joe Pesci doesn't fuck around. Doesn't fuck around. In fact, Joe Pesci came through on a couple of things that God was having trouble with. For years, I asked God to do something about my noisy neighbor with the barking dog. Joe Pesci straightened that cocksucker out with one visit. It's amazing what you can accomplish with a simple baseball bat. So I've been praying to Joe for about a year now. And I noticed something. I noticed that all the prayers I used to offer to God and all the prayers I now offer to Joe Pesci are being answered at about the same 50% rate. Half the time I get what I want, half the time I don't. Same as God, 50-50. Same as the four-leaf clover and the horseshoe, the wishing well and the rabbit's foot, same as the mojo man, same as the voodoo lady who tells you your fortune by squeezing the goat's testicles. It's all the same, 50-50. So just pick your superstition, sit back, make a wish, and enjoy yourself. And for those of you who look to the Bible for moral lessons and literary qualities, I might suggest a couple of other stories for you. You might want to look at The Three Little Pigs. That's a good one. Has a nice, happy ending. I'm sure you'll like that. Then there's Little Red Riding Hood, although it does have that X-rated part where the big bad wolf actually eats the grandmother, which I didn't care for, by the way. And finally, I've often always drawn a great deal of moral comfort from Humpty Dumpty. The part I like the best, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That's because there is no Humpty Dumpty and there is no God. None, not one, no God, never was. In fact, I'm gonna put it this way. If there is a God, may he strike this audience dead. See, nothing happened. Everybody's okay. All right, tell you what, I'll raise the stakes a little bit. If there is a God, may he strike me dead. See, nothing happened. Oh, wait, got a little cramp in my leg. And my balls hurt. Plus, I'm blind. Oh, now I'm okay again. Must have been Joe Pesci, huh? God bless Joe Pesci. Thank you all very much.
George Carlin, that man is sorely missed. That's the show today. I hope you had a good time. I appreciate you being here. I will see you back here next week, and we'll do it all over again. Take care. See you then.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming Freethought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.